ring, followed by the BBC News Service, World News Service, and that will lead to the recommencement of live programming at 7 o'clock in the morning. Good night.
You're listening to Sex Worker Radio on CFRU 93.3 FM, a collection of rebroadcasted material amplifying the voices of sex workers across North America and around the world. The following is an interview with Jean McDonald, Madeline North, and Monica Forrester from Maggie's Toronto, a sex workers' action project that strives to improve the safety and dignity of sex trade workers in Toronto. This material has been borrowed from the podcast series entitled After the Collapse, which focuses on the link between economic exploitation and social justice. After the Collapse broadcasts from Radio Regent, which provides a voice to the Regent Park area of Toronto. Visit radioregent.com for their program schedule and for more information.
Roundtable discussion today with workers from Maggie's, which is an organization run for and by sex workers. And Jin, can you go? Can you now go? Okay.
Okay. So today we have Jean McDonald. Jean is the current executive director of Maggie's, a Toronto Sex Workers Action Project. She has a long history of fighting for social justice in Toronto and is proud to be a part of the struggle for sex workers' rights and the decriminalization of sex work in Canada. And also we have Madeline North. Madeline is a sex worker advocate and board member with Maggie's Sex Worker Action Project in Toronto. She has a background in pro-choice feminist activism and anti-choice advocacy, or anti-violence advocacy, sorry, and is currently completing her master's degree in gender, feminist, and women's studies at York University. And we also have Monica Forrester. Monica is a two-spirit black queer femme who has been working in the sex industry for 25 years. Monica works and advocates to better the lives of all sex workers. And so, Jean, maybe we can start with you to tell us a little bit about Maggie's and how you came to work there.
Okay, sure. Well, thanks for having us on the show first. It's great to be here and great to have an opportunity to talk about Maggie's and the work that we do. Like Lewis said, Maggie's is an organization run for and by sex workers. We try to bring sex workers into the sort of arena of discussions around sex work. So what do sex workers need? We believe that sex workers themselves are the best. You know, obviously, it seems like a no-brainer, but very few people actually talk to sex workers about what we need in terms of legal rights, labor rights, social rights, etc. So at Maggie's, we offer a lot of harm reduction services. That's part of our mandate. So we supply safer sex supplies and safer drug use supplies. We run a weekly lounge for sex workers who come in. You can have a meal, hang out. We often have different workshops or fun things to do. Last week, Monica had a woman that does beading come in, and so make jewelry and earrings and necklaces. It's really popular. Sometimes doing nails. So it's like fun things, as well as also sometimes having peers talk about, you know, safer sex practices or safer screening practices for clients, and that kind of thing. We also have just restarted our street outreach program, which is really great. We had to unfortunately stop that for a few months due to funding issues, and we also have a monthly group for sex workers that we call the Real Work Group, and that's again, it's kind of like a support group or a place where sex workers can get together and chat and talk about different issues that affect them. And we recently had an organizational review, and one of my favorite things that I read in the comments from that, one of the people who come out to the Real Work Group She was talking about how she likes it because it's a space where she can just complain about work. Because when you're a sex worker, often if you complain about your work, people say, well, why are you doing this then? So it's like almost like the only job that you aren't supposed to complain about your work. You're supposed to be happy, the happy hooker all the time. Or you're completely disempowered and exploited victim, you know? And we really like to challenge that dichotomy at Maggie's, keeping space for bad experiences, but also bringing people together to talk about work and to talk about the real issues that we have, and also the awesomeness of the job at some points, you know? Like, it's and you can't also, I guess the other point is that it's such a varied profession, right? Like, so many things are considered sex work, from phone sex to street-based sex work to domination to escorting to stripping to
where do
massage.
Where do you draw the line? Like, how do you draw a line at the definition of sex work?
Well, because it's the sex industry, so we kind of, it's like a half of...
Yeah, at Maggie's we see the, like, sex work as broadly defined sex work. Yeah,
and also self-defined.
Self-defined.
If you feel what you're doing falls within the purview of sex work, then you're included at Maggie's.
And so many people look at sex work differently, and like they said, define it differently. So everyone identifies it so different. So to say we're all sex workers or we're all this is so unrealistic. Gina was saying, the Real Work Group is a collective of sex workers, and not just necessarily have to be women, it could be trans people, men. And they sit around and maybe talk about the ins and outs of sex work, how to better their business, how to work safely. And also, it's kind of connecting, like Jean said, because sometimes you can feel isolated within the work that you do. So to have someone to kind of validate some of your experiences or things that are going wrong in your life, or you know what I mean? But it's, to me, I've been doing it for 25 years. And it's a job where I can say when I don't feel like doing it, I don't have to do it. I can screen my clients. I can say yes or no. I don't have people telling me what I have to do. So there's a lot of perks, and it has allowed me to better my life in many different areas. I can live in a very comfortable place. I could go back to college. You know what I mean? So it has empowered me.
So, and Matt, maybe you can tell us a bit about your involvement at Maggie's, and also maybe talk a bit about the funding structure and how Maggie's operates.
Sure. So I haven't been with Maggie's for very long. I've been involved with the organization for about 3 years as a service user, on and off. What I find particularly interesting about Maggie's in terms of being a community service organization and sex work, you know, there are a lot of groups that offer resources to sex workers in this city. Sherburne Health Center, Sistering, for example, is someone you've worked with on this show before. What's particularly unique about Maggie's is, I think it's attention to sex worker culture, and Monica has said this before, and I think that's really important, is it really centers sex work as a viable, complex, interesting, relevant aspect to our lives and to society, I think. It extends past this idea of, you know, sex work as a last resort or sex work as victimizing, but really sees it as, you know, an interesting form of labor that's existed for centuries and people have engaged with in so many diverse ways, and really gives credence to this idea that, it's an important part of the lives that we're living. It's not all of the parts of the lives we are living, but it's, you know, it's important, just as important as someone else's job might be to them in any other aspect of labor. So I really like that about Maggie's. It's a really interesting place to be involved with in that way, and it's given me a lot of support personally and to the communities it's involved in. So I'm new to the board. I just joined the board, about 4 months ago. We've undergone a lot of changes recently in terms of funding, and I think Jean could probably speak to the funding a little more specifically, but from my perspective as a board member, I think, Maggie's... at this point is giving some really expanding services to really meet the needs of the communities that we're working with. So in terms of expanding our street-based outreach, doing a lot more to reach out to male sex workers in the city, which is kind of new for Maggie's. So to look at hustlers, for example, who also use these services and want to be able to improve their business, improve their safety, be involved in some form of advocacy, not necessarily through Maggie's, but to be able to advocate for their rights on, you know, a federal level at this point.
Well, maybe we'll take a quick break, and we can, when we come back, we'll continue the funding question, but also start talking about some of the laws that exist in Ontario and how that affects what you're doing. So why don't we start, Madeline, with your song choice, and maybe you can tell us what it was and what it is and why you've chosen it.
Yeah, I love this song. So this song is called "The Morning" and it's by The Weeknd. It's a very sexy song, which is part of the reason I chose it, because I think sex work is sexy and our lives should be sexier. Sex workers bring sexy things to life. The lyrics of this song are great. I think if you listen carefully, the man who wrote it perhaps has had some engagement with escorts in his life. He talks about a woman who's, you know, working hard for her money. She, you know, she's putting in a good day's work, and she might not be there in the morning, but it was worth it.
From the morning to the evening, complaints from the tenants. Got the walls kicking like they 6 months pregnant. Drinking LSA with our cereal for breakfast. Girls calling cabs at dawn, 6:45. Sky's getting cold, we flying from the north. Rocking with our city like a sold out show. A house full of pros that specialize in the hoeing. Make that money rain as they taking off their clothes. Order plane tickets, Cali is the mission. Visit every month like I'm split life living. Let the world listen if I hate his card slipping. Then my nigga stay tight. Got my back like Pippin. Fast life gripping. Yeah, we still tipping. Codeine cups paint a picture so vivid. Face try to mimic. Get girls timid, but behind closed doors they get pulled. Niggas testing, always fucking twisting. Why these niggas testing? Shit that I got them on. Straight bar, hop into the music of the ambiance. Get shit popping.
Okay, that was The Morning by The Weeknd. You're listening to After the Collapse on RadioRegion.com. We're talking with board members from Maggie's, an organization run for and by sex workers. And so, Jean, before we broke, we're going to talk a bit, before we got into the law, about the funding structures for Maggie's. Can you tell us a bit about where your funding comes from and how it's been affected by recent cutbacks?
Okay, sure. Well, we're not all board members. Madeline is a board member. I'm the administrative coordinator, now executive director, sort of. And Monica is the staff member, the community outreach coordinator. Outreach and community support worker. Anyways, we're funded primarily through the Ministry of Health. Through the AIDS Bureau, And so we're funded primarily as a harm reduction agency. Of course, you know, as most small community organizations, we're always kind of working and applying for new things and seeing what can come up. But our main funding body is the Ministry of Health. And we haven't had any cutbacks through that. I mean, we have a very minimal budget comparatively to any other organization. I mean, both Monica and I, we're the only staff, to give you an understanding, and neither of us are full-time. So that probably gives you an understanding of the organization in terms of how tiny it is. But the amazing thing is how much we are able to do with that tiny budget. You know, street outreach, we're expanding our drop-in hours to reach community members who want to come in and, you know, grab some STEM kits or needles or condoms, what have you, right? And we're always open. The way we understand harm reduction is meeting people where they're at, you know, and that's, I feel like, the mandate that we have from the Ministry of Health, from our funder, not to try to, you know, get involved in people's lives if they are drug users. Like, if they want to come to us and ask us for help with addiction, that's one thing. But we're not going to push any of our values on them. We're going to give them the supplies they need without judgment. So we can get a bit into the legal context, and maybe you guys can, Madeline or Monica, can jump in at some point, hopefully. So we're kind of in an interesting space legally in Canada right now. December 20th was the day that the Supreme Court of Canada struck down the three laws around sex work in Canada. Not all the sex work laws, but three main ones that criminalize sex work in Canada. And those are communicating for the purpose of prostitution, body houses, yes, being in a common body house, which I actually, it's so like Victorian. I'm in a common body house. Sounds so fun. I want to go to a body house. Yes, and the third is living off the avails. Now, these laws, you know, at first glance might seem, oh, we're living off the avails. Well, that's good. We should criminalize people who live off the avails. Those are pimps and bad people. But what that means for sex workers is that sex workers can't hire drivers. Sex workers can't hire security. Sex workers can't have a live-in boyfriend or girlfriend. I shouldn't say boyfriend, though. Well, I'm boyfriend if the sex worker is male. Whatever. You know what I'm talking about. Anyways, live-in partner. So those people get caught up under the law of living on the avails. The body house legislation, that means that sex workers legally cannot get together and work together, rent a space together and work together for safety reasons or for economic reasons. You know, economically it makes a lot of sense if you're an escort to rent a space and share it with other girls or boys. And then communicating is actually, I think it's like 80%+ of charges have been around communicating, and that disproportionately impacts street-based sex workers. And so by, you know, focusing on street-based sex workers and charging them with communications offenses, you know, that unfairly, you know, targets a most marginalized group of people, right? And the most visible group. And what that means is that people, sex workers, street-based sex workers, have less time to suss out their clients, right? So if there's a bad date list going around saying, you know, watch out for this license plate, da-da-da-da-da. So if you're worried that police are going to pick you up, and this also applies to laws that criminalize clients, so the client's going to be worried about being picked up, is you have to hop in that car right away. You can't do a little walk around, check the license plate, check out your list, chat with the guy, negotiate your prices, negotiate safer sex practices, condom use, and the services that you're going to offer.
So maybe Monica, you can talk to you. Maybe you can tell us a bit about why these laws were struck down.
Well, it was proven bad. Well, I think there's a lot of reasons why. Well, because the woman that actually challenged the laws, the Bedford case, they felt that that these laws were restricting them to work safely, to work in a space that was safe. They just felt very restricted, and also they were also fighting for the laws for many sex workers. So, like Jean said, street-based workers that were the most targeted and the most visible, you know. And to see, you know, because sex work's legal, like prostitution is legal. So it's the laws that were in sex work that made it illegal for sex workers to kind of navigate, to, you know, work with clients, to make money without being caught. You know what I mean? And like Jean said, it put a lot of sex workers at risk, right? So you're at risk of, you know, we've seen a higher increase of HIV and AIDS, you know what I mean, among sex workers. We've seen a higher statistics of abuse and deaths among sex workers. We've seen some areas of sex work going underground because of the laws that were, you know, enforced on certain groups. You know what I mean? So I think so the government always focuses. Like, I remember one time the government was saying, I think there was a big, while they're trying to push an inquiry around the Aboriginal woman that's been murdered. And Harper's like, well, they know they're doing sex work, so it's kind of their own fault if they're being killed and abused. So, like, we're hearing that from someone, like our government, saying, you know, they're not saying, so he's saying, to protect us, we have to put these laws on the women. But, like, you know what, if they really wanted to protect us, they would have laws that give us safety, that allow us to call police, that allow us to have to work safely.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
So it was good news that these laws were struck down.
Yeah, it was good news, but
generally
scary,
across
though.
The board.
It's still scary because you don't know the outcome.
Yeah.
Right.
You don't,
it's a legal limbo.
So now where are we now? Maybe you can Madeline, you can sort of talk about what's next.
Yeah, I mean, sex workers and sex worker advocates are overjoyed that these laws have been struck down in the recent decision. Absolutely. A great success for justice in this country. And now, like Jean said, it's in a state of legal limbo. So the Government of Canada had a year from December 20th to implement new laws that didn't conflict with the laws that were struck down.
Yeah.
So as Monica said, the three laws that were struck down were seen to compete with a right to safety under the Charter of Rights and Freedom. So those were seen to impede safety more than they, say, competed with, you know, a public decency or something like that, which is really important to keep in mind, right? So any laws that are going to be implemented in the spirit of these laws that were struck down should have in mind the safety for sex workers, to see that to impede the way that sex workers can communicate with their clients is problematic for their safety, to impede the way that sex workers can work communally, as per the Body House legislation, would impede their right to safety under the Charter of Rights and Freedoms. Anything that would compete with anyone's right to live off the avails, be it family, security, drivers, would be problematic under that same idea. So right now, I think we're all apprehensive to see what the government will implement. There's been some conversations that we've seen happen from Peter McKay and Stephen Harper, a lot of people leaning towards the Nordic approach, coming from a right-wing perspective.
Maybe you can describe what that would look like.
Sure. So what's been discussed by a lot of conservative feminist advocates, a lot of anti-sex work advocates, and a lot of religious perspectives has been the Nordic approach. So this is an approach that was policy that was put into place in 1999 in Sweden specifically, which instead of criminalizing sex workers themselves, so that would be if you're caught communicating for the purposes of prostitution as a sex worker, you would not be criminalized. However, your client would be. So it puts the onus of criminalization onto the client. And this kind of policy is done with the underlying assumption that sex worker, the underlying misinformation, I would say, that sex work is inherently violence against women. And that's where the Swedish approach is coming from. At Maggie's, we strongly oppose the Nordic model across the board, as do a lot of advocates of sex workers. Most sex workers in Sweden, feminist advocates, healthcare advocates, strongly oppose this model for a number of reasons. So first of all, similar to what we've been talking about around criminalization of sex workers themselves, we see that criminalization of clients puts sex workers in the exact same situation that puts their safety at risk. It impinges the way that they can implement their own safety protocols. So in Canada, just as laws against communication have been struck down, if you limit the way that clients can communicate and are going to be criminalized, you're going to see the same movement to the dark alley that's putting women at risk. It means that they can negotiate their own terms because they fear that their clients are going to be picked up. And which is interesting to think about, that also the Nordic model is asking sex workers to testify against their own clients in the court of law, and we've seen very few instances of any clients ever being successfully convicted of any crimes, because in reality, sex workers want to be seeing their clients. They want to be seeing their good clients, people who are respectful of them. I think if this was, inherently a violent activity, you would see a lot more convictions. And in reality, that's just not the case. Sex workers are in it with their clients. They respect their clients respect them. So any kind of culture that's going to criminalize clients is also going to put women at risk. Secondly, to put at risk, for example, we're seeing this in the States as well, is condoms used as evidence of sex workers to criminalize folks involved in the sex trade, which means a serious reduction in public health and condom use. If you can't carry condoms on the street with you and you're working as a sex worker, it really, really puts you at risk if you're thinking a cop is going to find you and find those condoms. So that's something that a lot of activists are working against right now, as in Sweden as well.
Do you have
anything to add?
Yeah. I can jump in. Well, what I'll jump in with is, so we just talked about the Nordic model, also considered called the Swedish approach, because it's only in two of the sort of so-called Nordic countries. But what we at Maggie's advocate for is the decriminalization of sex work, right? And we are joined, as far as I know, unanimously across the globe, which is quite amazing when you think about it, by, organizations that, like Maggie's, are by and for sex workers, unanimously support the decriminalization of sex work. And in terms of a labor movement, honestly, I think the sex workers' rights movement is the most phenomenal labor rights movement that is happening across the globe today. It is awe-inspiring.
Actually, when you were talking at the start, it sounded like Maggie's fills the traditional function of a union, that is to have a hall to talk about work and to work towards policy decisions. Out of that solidarity that builds from being workers together in the same place with the same problems, talking
about
the same issues.
Yeah.
So maybe we should take a break for a song now.
Private Dancer by Tina Turner. When I think of that, I just think of a lot of my work being behind closed doors, putting on this facade. Because we do wear different hats in our work, and we fulfill fantasies. And so I think it's just,
Well, the men come in these places, and the men are all the same. You don't look at their faces, their names. You don't think of them as human. You don't think of them at all. You keep your mind on the money, keeping your eyes on the wall. I'm your private dancer.
for money, and any old music will do. I want to make $1 million. I want to live out by the sea. Have a husband and some children. Yeah, I guess I want a family. All the men come in these places, and the men are all the same. You don't look at their faces, and you don't ask their name. I'm your pride.